It is January 23rd. Winter Nutrition Counseling Roundtable call. And I think some of you have been on these calls before and some of you haven't. Welcome. We have about 8 or 9 people on the call at this point. And I always like to start out with any cool positive stuff you want to share. Some of you may have been reading my tips for a while and discovered some neat consequences of what happens or have been to some of my trainings and want to share how things are getting better for you with your nutrition counseling. Who would like to share something positive first? Anybody?
Hello, Molly? Hi, my name is Dawn Johnson. This is my first time on the roundtable discussion. I did listen to the recording last time, and I'm excited to be participating this time. And as far as the utilizing motivational interviewing, I'm finding it today helpful with regard to opening up my agenda to the patient. And
your agenda or finding out theirs?
Opening it up. I have something in mind that I would like to discuss. I guess you might call it matching agendas.
So exploring a match between your agenda and theirs. And I'm imagining you're using open-ended questions.
Absolutely.
And then reflecting what you hear and asking permission to pop in what you'd like to get to.
Yes.
Like that. Great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Anybody else have any thing they want to share about how they're using the skills? Or any fun things that have happened when they use them. I'll actually share one the other day. I almost forgot with a client. I was about to launch into a little spiel, as they call them, a piece of education. This one happened to be about how the GI system works, particularly how the stomach works, and how, of course, after one eats, it feels very full and might feel a little uncomfortable. This was a client with eating disorder. So I was about to launch into my spiel, and I reminded myself, oh, wait a minute, Kellan, you have to ask permission first. So I first asked, what do you know about how the digestive system works, and particularly what happens in the Well, this client gave me a detailed could teach a course, on the role of the stomach in the GI, in the whole digestive process, and how digestive juices get pumped in there right after the food comes in. And so all I needed to do at that point was to sort of ask her to then figure out what that meant for her and her feeling of this meal. And I was so glad I asked what she knew first, before launching into my spiel, because her eyes would have glazed over if I had gone into that, and she would have been insulted, essentially. That was something that happened with me recently. Anybody else want to share something positive or it's working well? Start bringing up challenges that you're running into, questions you might have about motivational interviewing in nutrition settings, or anything about the process of helping clients make changes. quiet group today. Only got about 8 or 9 people on the call, so we do need people to jump in. What questions do you have?
I'll say something. Hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Yep. This is my first time participating in one of these calls, Molly. My name is Diane Alpern. I did one of your integrated nutrition intensives probably 10 years ago in Framingham when it was combined with a Jessica Setnick boot camp for eating disorders. So I don't know how many years ago that was, but I continue to enjoy your emails and counseling tips, and try to practice MI as often as I can. And I guess I could use a refresher on dealing with the type of patients that comes. I'm working right now at a place called Valley Medical Group, and it's a series of health centers, and I'm doing outpatient nutrition counseling for providers for a lot of diabetes and weight management. So what's your recommendations for dealing with the patient that comes in and says, I know everything I need to be doing, I just kind of can't do it, and it's like they kind of feel like they know it all, but they're just having trouble applying it, and often it's mindful eating and emotional eating, mindless eating, emotional eating coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be your initial approach of that patient that basically comes in with that mode?
Is there anyone on the call who immediately comes up with an idea of how they handle those situations?
Hi, Molly. This is Dawn again. I had an idea. I'm not sure how smooth this might be. I like to use the importance ruler.
Mm-hmm.
Going
yes.
back to how important is this to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, Diane, first making clear what exact changes they're talking about. Because some people are sort of, eating healthier or something, you know, following the diet. You know, something vague like that, which is not a behavior. I mean, you really can't get your hands around it very well. So,
yeah,
helping the person get clear. And personally, I find one of the ways to do that is say, "Oh, I'm so glad you're really informed." It's an affirmation, right? Just fill me in a little about it, exactly what it is that you know that you want to be doing, so that they may save some time because they'll tell you. Well, it's desserts, or it's eating in the evening, overeating, or, you know, they'll quickly come up with the more specifics. And if it sounds to you that indeed that sounds like a good place to start, and you have a specific behavior, you can go to what Dawn said and ask them to scale. Diane, are you familiar with scaling? Is that something you do very much?
I don't do it often enough. I'm familiar with the technique, yeah. And usually people will say it's an 8 or a 10. And then I follow up with, well, what makes it that important to you? You know, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, how would your life be if you were really able to get to this goal? And, you know, try to draw them out that way. And then it's a matter of, yeah.
And having it tied to the behavior. Because
mm-hmm.
when
yeah.
you ask someone how important is it to lose weight is not a behavior, right? Or
right.
for your A1C to go down, that's an outcome, it's not a behavior. You know, so if you once you get it into a behavior like keeping an eye on portions at dinner, using a smaller plate, you know, for example,
mm-hmm.
then you word your question that way. You say, so how important is it to you right now, this week, to be working
mm-hmm.
on taking a look at those portions at your dinner
mm-hmm.
and seeing what you can do?
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, so that you help them specify it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really not important. And 10 is, yeah, know, looking at that dinner. Because often people will say, yeah, it's really important because I want to weigh less, you know. But that isn't what you want to ask. It doesn't do much good. They want the outcome. The outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring that idea. That's helpful. Okay.
And then once you have a behavior that is, the importance is at least a 7 or, you know, pretty high, then you scale confidence and go from there to work on, you know, how to make my husband do it. So how are we doing with that? With the issues you brought up? Need more or?
That's a helpful start. I think I need to reread, relook at the coaching process for the importance level and the confidence level, and you know, identifying the barriers.
I'll when I send out the recording, I'll include the links to the tips on scaling.
Great. Okay.
I wrote one on clients who aren't making changes, sort of stuck places. So that, I think, has some things. And also something about the difference between outcomes and behaviors.
Yeah.
Specific behaviors. And frankly, my take with people who sort of say that kind of thing, like, oh, I know it all, but I can't do it. You know, Diane, what do you got to lose? You might as well say, okay, well, let's take a look at, you know, ask them to slow down, essentially. Say, well, let's take a look at that. And invite them to sort of sit back and be willing to be curious and explore. Because when they say, I know what I should be doing and I'm not doing it, they're in a very stuck place where their devil and angel are battling shoulders, you know. And you want to get that to settle. Curiosity.
Yeah, and I find that it really helps to take the focus off the number on the scale. It's like, well, let's just think about some healthy ways, you know, some adjustments you can make to what you're doing, and that'll result in fewer calories or less sugar coming in, you know, and let's just focus on that, you know.
And then scale, how important is it for you to work on the amount of simple sugars you're getting in right now? Yeah. Something very specific, because they may go, no, you know, they hadn't been looking at it from that point of view. People often look at it from a global, I should eat better, you know. And just like anything that overwhelms any of us, when we break it down, it tends to work, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And we can help them do that, break it down. I think I may have actually written a tip on overwhelm. Point. I'm not sure. I'll see if I can find it. If not, I should write one. Anything else you need about that, Diane?
That is really helpful. And in fact, I'm actually thinking about a success I had a couple of weeks ago with a patient using a sort of a similar approach. And she was just kind of eating all day long, just meal, snack, meal, snack, meal, snack, just sort of grazing, eating all day long. And, you know, we identified that her excessive snacking, even at a lot of times she wasn't hungry, was like she really had no clue how many calories she was getting. So she was a woman with severe obesity. And, like, I followed up with her a week after our initial visit, because there's often a good month or more between my visits with people. The way our clinic's set up, it's not like a weekly follow-up situation. So I happened to follow up with her 1 week later, and she was like, I can't believe this. I started writing down what I'm eating. I stopped eating between meals when I wasn't hungry, and I've lost 4 pounds. I just, like, this has been staring me in the face, you know, for years. It's just like, it just never occurred to me how often I'm eating when I'm not hungry. And, you know, it was just like a game changer, just like Yeah. And because I had been able to help her pinpoint, you know, what was her behavior that was contributing to all these excess calories. And she just, you know, she was ready. You know, that's the key. You know, she was at a point where she was receptive and really ready to take a look at this eating without hunger behavior. Was feeling really pleased, and the woman with diabetes as well. So I'm hopeful that at her next visit she'll have sustained that. Yeah.
What about the habit issue? What do they say about the research shows that 7 to 10 weeks of doing something before it becomes a habit? And so hopefully you'll be able to follow up with her, and if she falls out of the habit of doing that, remind her that.
Mm-hmm.
For a while. That really, Diane, thanks for sharing that. It really shows how sometimes the answers are, a lot of the answers are in the client. I mean, we pop in certain information. But when we slow them down and ask them to step back and look
mm-hmm.
at the situation,
they yeah.
can often see where the issues are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. That was very helpful.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Who else has a concern or question?
Molly, I wanted to say I barely can hear you.
Oh, is everyone having trouble hearing me?
Yes, a
is
little.
Is that
bit.
Any better? Is that any better?
Well, that's better.
A little
yeah.
bit better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay, good. I'm sorry
oh,
about that.
Oh, much better.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Much better.
I think the little thing on my headset wasn't quite pointed toward my mouth. I'm sorry.
Cool. Okay, now I can participate.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Other questions or concerns?
I have a question, Molly.
Sure.
What do you think is a reasonable time to spend with a patient to have, to even just to broach the topic of changing behaviors from your experience? What do you think is a reasonable, the least amount of time? I know it sounds kind of like a bad question, but I work with other dietitians and I mentor them, and that seems to be an ongoing concern is the time constraint, and I struggle with that myself. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sold on the MI approach, and I want to do it justice. And
mm-hmm.
what is your professional opinion about what is it? What I tell myself is, okay, I'm going to spend 10 minutes with this patient, and I'm going to be present with this patient for 10 minutes. What is
mm-hmm.
what is your take on that?
There are a lot of qualifiers here. One of them is how long an attention span does this person have, or literally how long until their ride comes to pick them up, or, you know, I mean, literally how long they have, that person has. Because some people, particularly if you're talking about particularly young people, or particularly older people, they may not be able to take in more than, you know, about 15 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other people who are in the prime of their life and really on top of things and could be there for 2 hours with you and be fine and, you know, and engaging the whole time. So part of it is what the client can handle. And then there's the limitations that you have. Is that mostly what you're concerned about, the limited time you have?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, ideally you would have at least, you know, 50 minutes or an hour the first time you see somebody and at least, say, half hour for follow-ups or something like that. I mean, but that's a really general rule of thumb. When you literally only have 10 or 15 minutes, and clinics are often like that. Then you get really good at narrowing down with the client what you're actually going to use that 10 minutes for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the person has newly diagnosed diabetes, they're not going to get everything they need from you in 10 or 15 minutes, which we all know. I mean, even if you could talk that fast, they wouldn't be able to take it in, right? So then you find out what they need most right there at that visit. And are you able to do follow-up visits?
Yes. I work
in your setting? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you can do follow-up. So then you hopefully have, keep notes, and you can make a note that this is what you covered this time, and they were also interested in eating out or whatever, and you promise to get to that next time, and you can get fairly efficient at what I sometimes call hit-and-run nutrition counseling. So what I hear you saying is that today what you want to know is how to handle if your blood sugar goes low. Okay, here's a handout on it, or even start out with what do you know already, and if they know absolutely nothing, then you do your whole spiel. and if they know some things, you might be able to just really reinforce and add a couple things and give them a handout so they'll have it handy. Now, if you're talking about real behavior change, mm-hmm. it 10 or 15 minutes is really hard. If the behavior is small enough, though, you may be able to get somewhere. The client is able to, with your help, narrow it down to one specific behavior, like not bringing chips home, one specific thing, or not walking into a donut store or something, you may be able to help them make a strategy for that one thing, reminding them that the smaller the steps are, the more apt they are to stick with them, and the more successful they'll be in the long run, if they keep coming back and you keep working with them. Now, I've been wandering on and on. How are we doing about this time issue? Did I lose you? Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Molly?
Yeah. You still there?
How are we doing with the time issue?
Yes. Yeah. How am I doing with the answer?
Oh, wonderfully. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the feedback. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Absolutely. I can see how focusing is key. Having
mm-hmm.
an engaged patient and having a focus.
Right. Yeah. And literally helping the client, having the client help you focus it. Say, gosh, well, let's see. We've only got 10 minutes. If we were to get to one thing that would be most important to you, what would it be? Mm-hmm. Right? I'll also include, there's actually a tip I've prepared to send at the beginning of February, excuse me, that's a lot about time and time limits and time boundaries and all that kind of thing. So look for that when that comes out.
You have something else about the short time. This is Diane Alpern again.
Sure, jump in.
One of the things I do in my clinics is integrated nutrition therapy, where I'm assigned for a full family practice session to be circulating around the rooms and to be jumping in and out of rooms, not having my regular scheduled appointments. Mm. But it is basically often like a 10-minute segment of time.
Right.
Yeah, where the
provider until the doctor comes in or
pull me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, or they've just seen the doctor and they have 10 minutes, but they have to run to pick up their kid at daycare or whatever.
Right, exactly.
And the doctor will say,
I
worked
in the prenatal clinic. Yep.
Yeah. So the doctor will say, well, this person has morbid obesity and their A1C has just gone up to 9 and they're not monitoring their sugars and, you know, they're not doing any activity. See what you can do. And I'm like, okay. And
right.
Sometimes they've been referred to nutrition in the past and no-showed or last minute canceled over and over. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's just an initial sort of soft introduction to me, like, hey, we have
uh-huh.
a nutritionist you can book an appointment with, you know, presuming their insurance covers
mm-hmm.
and all that. So
right.
I often have that short period of time, and I'm overwhelmed with, oh, what do I work on in, like, 10 minutes, you know, 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, with all of these problems going on, and I think I can be a little overwhelming to the patient. I kind of come in with my stack of handouts. And
yeah,
overwhelming to them because it's kind of like sort of too much, and I like this idea
mm-hmm.
of just really fairly quickly within a couple of minutes seeing if we can focus on like one thing. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, okay, so you're drinking like, you know, a liter of Coke every day. Well, you know, whatever. Or you're skipping your meals
yeah.
and eating all your food at night. You know, what do you think is the most important thing that you could change? You know, what would be the
right.
biggest bang for your buck to really focus
yeah.
on changing
and,
one of these things or whatever? You know?
Right. And the bang for your buck concept can often
mm.
work well in these situations because it's really obvious to do that there's loads of different changes that they could make that would be a good idea. And you're,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably part of your training is you're fairly quickly able in your head to figure out which is the best bang for their buck.
Yeah.
And you don't want to just totally dump that on them. But you can ask, you can say,
yeah.
you know, I have a sense of what might get you closer to getting that A1C down as quickly as possible. Might you like to hear that? Sort of ask permission.
Yeah.
Offer it, you know,
yes.
but it's
mm-hmm.
it looks to me like the soda would be, and then quickly put the ball back in their court.
Mm-hmm.
So we could talk more about that. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
if they say, oh, yeah, oh, you know, then you launch into that, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do have a tough situation. I remember those, you know, you come into the examining room for a few minutes type of things. Yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully those people can schedule an appointment with me and their insurance will cover and that
mm-hmm.
they will show up
yeah.
An upcoming appointment and so we can go into
right.
more detail. But I like this idea of offering them a nugget of just, you know, a little
mm-hmm.
something to start working on and just sort of see how that feels because
right.
there might be a few week
yeah.
interval from that date till when they walk into my
right.
exam room.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And also you might be able to, if their brain is that organized or coming up with that much,
mm-hmm.
you might at the end be able to do a summary. You might want to review summaries in MI. Where, you know, you say, it sounds like you and the doctor were both concerned about your A1C being so high, and he's aware that there's several things that could easily be done. You throw in easily to get some hope up, you know, easily be done to begin to bring that down. And we've talked about this one thing that you're going to do in the next few weeks, and then when we meet together in a couple weeks, we can begin to talk about some of those other ones. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you
yeah,
set
yeah.
them up. Now, whether they remember that summary, I don't know. But if you've written it down, you might be
yeah.
able to, if they come in the next time, you might be able to start with that summary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Summaries are cool.
Yeah. That sounds great. That's
cool.
Really
yeah.
helpful reminder. Yeah.
Okay. sorry for my coughing
mm-hmm.
and tail end of a cold. So, any other observations or comments about the having minimal time issue and or anything new to bring up?
Sorry, go ahead.
There are two people now. I wanted to ask, what do you do, like, how do you create, this is Thaisia, I'm a diabetes educator, how do you create an environment or a space when you're with a patient in a way that they're at ease and trusting? So sometimes what I get with patients is, there are consults, so I'm mentioning for the first time, and certain consults, you know, people are open and they're like, this is, they're saying truly what they're eating.
They're ready. And,
honestly.
Yeah.
They're honestly saying it. And then there are people that are, yeah, I eat the chicken and vegetables. And, of course, you know, it's quite the truth. So, and I'm there not to judge. I'm there to help. And so I'm like, okay, so how do I make this space so they can actually, like, be okay sharing whatever needs to be shared so they can find the ways to be healthy?
Yeah. So you're talking about, for instance, people who come in and say, yeah, I'm already doing all that. And you know that's not the case. Or they just aren't forthcoming at all about what they might want or what they're eating or whatever. Let me toss out my first suggestion about that and see how that goes. And, well, first let me ask you one question. Can you tell 30 seconds to a minute into the session that it's going to be one of those?
That's something that I haven't identified yet.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's
okay.
A good question, because I guess I'm going in like sort of, okay, I'm not just, so I'm going in with I'm here to help, and I'm assuming that they would, so I guess I get frustrated. It's like, how come you're like,
right,
lying?
Okay, so and you're going in with the, you know that you're non-judgmental. You know that you simply want to help them, and you're not going to give them more time. They don't know that. You don't know that they are either coming with their experience of their last three dietitians that did judge them or should them or whatever, or it's simply within their head that their head is criticizing them and judging them, and they're just assuming that you're going to do that because they project their judgment onto you. Now, and I get it that you don't necessarily know that right away. I guess my suggestion, if you're willing, it would be doing something a bit radical on your part and may take a little bit of oomph, and that is to go into each session with a sort of a stance on your part of not having a clue where this person's coming from, just trying to let go of all your assumptions, right, and seeing if you can focus for the first – few minutes, or it might even take longer than that, to literally just work on getting on their page, work on that step of motivational interviewing called engagement. And you might want to find that tip. I will find it at some point, and I will point it to you when I send out the mailing later today. On engagement, just really sort of radically focus on engagement. Now, if you can tell within 30 seconds or a minute that they're engaged and they're fine and they, you know, you're off and running. If you're still sensing some reluctance, they're not very forthcoming, you stick longer with almost literally the small talk type stuff, you know, like, you know, commiserating with their cold or you know, whatever is up or the pain that they're in right now or they're being embarrassed that the doctor sent them to you or I don't know, whatever it is, just hear it. Just hear it. And setting aside what you hope to get to until such point that you have the sense that they're getting it, that you're there for them. Some clients actually take an entire session to get to that point, which can be pretty frustrating for us.
Because we have an agenda.
Yeah, you have
right,
an agenda.
We gotta get results.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and
I need to put something in the chart too.
Right, exactly. And you know full well that when you don't have engagement and you just have resistance and lying or whatever, it's like it ends up being a waste of time. I think what I'm hearing you say is sometimes you don't realize you're behind that eight ball at that, you know, until halfway through, you know. And that happens sometimes. So you might want to review both the tip on engagement. I think that one's still in my archives. I will quickly look it up because I wrote tips sorry for the sniffles, on all four processes, the main four processes of MI, and looking through here, and the first one is engagement, and so I spent some, where are the spirit, where are the processes? They're in here somewhere. Well, I'll send that. Mm-hmm.
So what I hear is like get in their world and not assume.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's tip 115, which is on my website still. It's in the archives. And so if you were game, you could, you know, at least when you can or you're having a good day or whatever, you could sort of take a radical, I'm going to just focus on engagement, you know, at the beginning of each session and see how that goes.
And how long is it individual, like in your experience and perhaps other, whoever's on the call in your experience, like how long does it take? What's like, average or minimum to maximum?
Yeah. It can be really short because you can be, you know, asking the client how their day's going and whatever, and then they start launching it with questions for you, you know, and then you're off and running. And there are other people where there's loads of internal resistance about making any changes or even talking about the topic, where it literally can take the entire session. One of the things that Steve Rolnick, who's one of the originators of MI, says that his theory, at least is, his sort of belief, is that if you spend roughly 20% of whatever time you think you have being willing to really just do engagement, just keep being curious, even if the person's beginning to talk about some specific changes, just stay curious and keep reflecting back what you hear about what they say, what they think they would like to do, before doing any launching into our wonderful advice. So that's my general response. And anybody else have any input about that issue of engagement?
Molly, when you say 20% of your time, assuming you have a half an hour to spend with that patient.
Mm-hmm. It
20%
would be
of that
6 minutes.
Spent.
Yeah. It would be the first 6 minutes. Now, that's rigid. I mean, obviously,
okay,
you wouldn't do that. But to give you an idea, if you have half an hour, if you're willing to do this, it makes sense to have the sense that you're opening up at least 6 minutes to just find out where they're at, what they know already, what their doctor said, you know, just sort of get them to talk about what's up about whatever this is, or even about their diabetes, what it feels like to them and how they're dealing with the fact that they have this diagnosis, and just trying to get on their page. Now, I'm not saying you have to. We never say that in MI. I'm inviting you to give it a try, though, and see what happens. And then for the person who did bring this up initially, the other thing to do when you get caught halfway through and you realize, this person's really just yes-butting or obviously lying or whatever, that's where it makes sense to do the rolling with resistance techniques. Some of them perhaps particularly radical, a real backing up, you know, saying, gosh, I'm getting the sense that we're not doing what you need, what you wanted to get out of this today. Let's back way up. Tell me what it is that brought you in here, if they came in voluntarily, of course. Tell me what you hope to get. to you back up, basically. How are we doing with this issue?
Lots of great ideas, and like as I'm hearing you, I'm thinking about now. Like I have questions, which probably I will get the answers to as I read your tips. More like, okay, how do I engage the specifics? What kind of questions to ask? And it's going to be individuals with each person. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I can just remember it from my personal, you know, the experience, previous experience.
Yeah,
and
if you already know the person.
Oh,
go on.
In a way, I actually did it yesterday without, like, realizing now, oh, this was engagement. And it was different, actually. The whole session was different. Because it was, it was flowing and the person was getting what they needed to get. And it wasn't like, mm-hmm. you got to do this. and
right.
I did engage. And it was like, we actually spent, I don't know, 3 minutes just kind of like establishing this connection, a human connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did you do that? Do you remember how you did it?
Oh, curiosity, not having agenda,
uh-huh.
just having fun.
Yeah, almost just chatting, sort of.
Say it again?
And almost just chatting or doing small talk.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
exactly. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Actually, it happened to a two-person. The other person, he was wearing a shirt with a Harley Davidson. I'm like, oh, you ride a motorcycle. And I started talking about motorcycles.
Exactly, yeah. And it's, especially if we have fairly limited time, it can feel like, oh, that's a waste of time. The trick is to get good at doing enough of that and figuring out when it's enough for that person and when it's time to say, well, let's see. I'm the dietitian here in the clinic. What might I help you with? You know, and will you sort of shift gears? Because some people, if you let them, they'll talk forever about their motorcycles and then the time.
Yeah.
So it's,
right.
it's always a balancing act.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. One of the things I try to do, like one of my opening lines with brand new people is, I'm so glad you're here today. How can I help you? Or, you know, what are your concerns? You know, what are you interested in talking about? Not like,
uh-huh.
oh, the doctor's referred you for your weight. You know, like I don't even say anything. I just
yeah,
like
you
completely
don't start with it.
Open
yeah.
up. Right. It's just start out with, you know, how can I help you? And then as they're talking, and they might be talking about their arthritis pain and, oh, my knees have been really hurting mm-hmm. me. You know, and then I'll just find kind of at the point that feels right, the time to just pick one of the things they've said to say, oh, so how does that pain in your legs affect your ability to move these days? You
uh-huh.
know, like, you know, kind of transition it into the questions around activity or, you know, does this affect your ability to prepare food for yourself in your kitchen at home? Or, you know, tell me
uh-huh.
more about that, you know? So I'll kind of try to be listening for the right place to bring it into,
yeah.
you know, more a topic-oriented
yeah, exactly.
discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's part of just being a human being and connecting with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And often that really open-ended question at the beginning can work very well, like, you know, even sort of what's up or what do you hope to get or, you know, what brought you in. Some people, that's too open or they feel like, what do you mean? Doctor told me to be here, you know?
Right. A lot of people can't answer that question. I know what you mean.
Right, right, yeah.
Right.
In which case you may need to, if you've never met them before, part of engagement can be something like admitting that, saying, you know, I'm aware you and I have never met each other before. I'm a stranger to you, and the idea is we're going to be talking about your eating and how you eat and what you eat and stuff. And so it'd be nice if I could get to know you a bit, you know, so that you sort of help them.
Yeah.
Understand. And then they may tell you, well, I've got this arthritis in my knees, and that makes it hard for me to walk. And say, oh, great. I'm glad you shared that with me. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a few minutes left. If there was another question or concern, what would it be? I think there was one other person who had a question, wasn't there?
Molly, I did have a question about, I've heard this term before. I have not been able to research it. Maybe you have. It's called brief motivational interviewing. And I believe.
Well, brief action planning is often what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, BAP, brief action planning. I think that's probably what you're referring to. It's some people in Canada who work in medical settings who have sort of taken all the concepts of MI and figured out how to do them in short periods of time. And I believe I wrote a tip on that. I wish I had my alphabetical list in front of me. I don't. But I will send a link out for that, too. It's a way of... it's sort of hit and run, if you will, or guerrilla MI. And it's a matter of very quickly focusing in on just one topic, asking what the person already knows about it, providing some information as focused as you possibly can, and then asking them what they're going to do, you know, asking them for a plan, basically,
okay.
For a commitment. and that can, I mean, particularly if it's in a, they know it's a medical setting, it's something, and there is a, you know, very specific thing, they may, people may be able to do that pretty quickly. It's usually called brief action planning, and if you Google it, you'll get to the site of the folks that have developed that, and there's sort of a little format that's used, and I think they have a video or two on there, too. Brief action planning. Yeah, good question.
That sounds like it'll be a great approach for the integrated nutrition that I do where I'm stopping into rooms briefly.
Right.
It sounds like it
exactly.
would tie in with that.
Yeah. And the trick is to keep with the spirit of MI and the client-centeredness of it in a brief. Setting. Anything else?
Well, it's probably too much to talk about in a short time, but I don't know how much people struggle with the electronic medical record and the need to be documenting and typing into the computer as we're meeting with people and not fall behind by, you know, jotting it down and, you know, or having several people in a row and not being able to remember if you don't document in real time that balance between being present for the person and putting the information that needs to go into the EMR. That is just a constant struggle for me.
That is a
other people
struggle.
Have
yeah, a lot of people have
ideas on
with
it.
That. Let me see if anyone on the call has. I have a few ideas that I've collected from other people. I don't use EMR myself, and it was so long ago. I was in a medical setting; they didn't have it back then. But who has some ideas about how to handle that?
Well, I know for me, I do write, I may write notes or take mental notes and then get behind a computer and chart. I don't make it a practice to chart while I'm talking to the patient. So, I mean, we're revisiting same topics over and over again, I can chart. After I do my rounds, I do my charting, so it's fresh in my mind.
Yeah, if that can work. I personally have trouble if I don't write my notes immediately after a session. I have trouble remembering them. One of the things that I know some people do is literally say some things out loud to the client as you go along. I'll give you an example of I went to a nephrologist once, and he came in, was very engaging, looked me in the eye, shook my hand, saying, "What are you here for? What do you want?" And I started spilling all my questions and concerns. And then he said, "We'll get to all of these. Now, I need to get some stuff out of my computer." So he turned to his computer, And I remained quiet as he was busy, you know, looking up the labs and all that kind of stuff. And then he turned back toward me and started answering my questions. And then as he needed to note something down, he said, hold on a minute, that sounds really important. I want to note that down. So then he would turn toward his computer and do that. And it felt so respectful, so respectful. Now, after he had done that a little bit, when he turned back to his computer to write things again, it didn't, you know, it didn't feel like it broke engagement because he had worked so hard to do that. I mean, I don't know if he worked hard. He's gotten into the habit of doing it. It felt engaging anyway. Interestingly enough, you can also use it to accentuate or to sort of underline some of the things the client says. If they say something that sounds really key to you and they may not even notice it, you know, you may say, oh, gosh, that sounds really important, what you said about whatever it was. And then you turn to your computer and put it in there, right? And that sort of accentuates to them, wow, that was important. And also, hopefully, you're documenting their commitments, their plans. So when they watch you typing in, you can say, oh, okay, so you said, let's see, you're going to, let's see, two times a week, and, you know, as you're typing it in, you're repeating back what they said. So you may be able to use it a little bit. And if you, I'm presuming you can go back in, so you can fill in some of the boxes while you're with them and then go back and do the rest of them later.
My goal is to fill out as many of the boxes as I can while I'm with them.
Right.
So I have a minimal amount of additional charting to do, and especially I might see a few people in a row, and my sessions always tend to be running on the long side, and I don't allow the space in between clients, so I'm rushing right from one person to the next.
Yeah, and do some apologizing, saying, gosh, you know, my memory is not really good, and I do want to remember all this important stuff we talked about.
I like that idea about what that nephrologist did, though, like letting you talk and then just kind of put respectfully and just
being deliberate.
Deliberately just saying, okay, you know what, I just want to make sure I remember all this stuff, just give me a moment, you know, and then and it also gives you a chance as a patient to be composing your thoughts and thinking about additional questions you might not have mentioned. So,
saying, oh, hold on a minute, that sounds important, I want to write that down, you know. Good. I'm glad that was helpful.
Great.
Any other
Very
ideas
helpful.
Anybody else has? Okay. I'm not sure I've written a tip on, I think I may have written a tip on taking notes, though I'm not sure. I'll see. It sounds like when I send out the link to this recording, I'll be, suggesting some other tips for people to read. Well, we have a minute or two if anybody has a final comment or quick question. Okay, well, this has been great. Thank you. And
Molly, how often do these calls happen? Because I've been getting these messages for years, and this is the first time I've actually been free at the time the call's happening and could make it.
I schedule them roughly every 3 months.
Okay. This is so helpful.
And
At
the later today, I will schedule the next one, and I will put the date on the email that I send out with the link to the recording, and then I'll send out a reminder beforehand. Okay. Well, this is great. Thank you all for being on the call.
Thank you, Molly.